It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Oh! Welcome into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined 6 feet away from Scotty Borderline here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, and it is a loaded podcast for you. We're going to talk Mason Jones declaring that he is going to stay in the NBA draft. Arkansas-Oklahoma announced a basketball series that's going to last for at least 2 years, maybe even more. We don't know yet. And then Scotty's written J.D. Notte. He talked to J.D. Notte, written a good story about J.D. Notte. And we also got some teases along the way about some stories upcoming as well that we will get to tease to you for when they were going to come out. But first things first, this is your Last Dance update to start off the podcast. I thought the episodes 5 and 6 are good. It's hard to believe that we're already more than halfway through.
I know. It was crazy. Like, we were waiting. Felt like forever for the first couple episodes to get here, and now 3 weeks have gone by.
And it's sad.
6 episodes in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Sundays have been, not that I don't look forward to Sundays, but it's like you almost don't want Sunday to get here because
Monday comes after.
Yeah, because Monday comes after, and you got to start this whole deal over again. Not that we don't like working.
Exactly.
But it's almost like these days, it's almost like I've gone back to. It was almost kind of like we have a Monday through Friday job. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're supposed to get 2 days off a week, like when we're working normally.
Yeah, yeah.
But that rarely happens just because everything's just...
sports.
Yeah, it's 24-7. But, yeah, like that's a... The Last Dance has been a great way to end the weekend. And I think it's pretty safe to say that Michael Jordan had a gambling problem. That would be my... That's my take from... the last couple episodes.
You think?
I think so. I mean, shooting quarters in some back room in the, like, in the gallows of the
United Center.
Yeah. Or the arena that they played in with this one of the Sniff Bros, or the Sniff Brothers. Isn't that what they called them? The security that just followed Jordan around?
I don't know. He hit him with the Jordan shrug, though, which is iconic on Twitter now.
Yeah, yeah. It was nothing but memes, and, like, with that picture attached to it, it was pretty great.
Ah, oh, man, it was fantastic. Yeah, he might have had a gambling problem going out and spending a lot of money on golf. And the best part about it was the plane rides. To where it wasn't like they were in the back and gambling and everybody else was in the front just like reading a book or something. It was basically a mobile gambling center.
Right.
Because they had the high rollers in the back and then the guys in the front. They were still gambling. They were just playing blackjack. There was a dollar a hand,
right,
instead of whatever they were doing in the back
playing
there.
It safe.
Yeah. And I just thought that struck me. I was like, it's not like they're not gambling. They're still gambling. They're just gambling with less money. And then MJ came in and wanted to take their money as well.
Yeah, the guys at the front were just playing for fun. And the guys in the back were like serious about it.
Right, right. And then the Dream Team is always a fantastic, like, just to get inside
into
them.
Yeah, the footage of those legendary practices.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think I ever really get tired of hearing about that, watching those clips again.
In Magic talking about, yeah, I believe it was Magic talking about how after the practice they're all on the bus and it's kind of quiet because MJ went off and is yelling, and he's MJ, you know, who's a very competitive, kind of a jerk out there,
yeah,
on the court. And
he's a sociopath on the floor.
I could see that. And that's a good word for it. And they're all on the bus afterwards. You're kind of going, you know, this is the most talented team here by far. But what's going to happen with this whole team chemistry? And then Magic goes, well, I guess we shouldn't have started talking to him, should we? It was him and somebody else that started talking trash to Jordan. And it just motivated him. I can't remember who, though. That was funny.
Yeah, it was great.
And then it makes me wonder, how many titles would have Jordan have won if Jerry Krause hadn't have ticked him off? Because a lot of the stuff that seems to be, and this may be just the way that the documentary is painted, but, well, Jerry Krause really liked this guy.
So I was going to go shut him down. Jerry Krause didn't get, pay Scotty his money. So we're going to go prove that Scotty was
right.
Money.
Right.
And all of this stuff just to prove to Jerry that, hey.
Anything that Jerry Krause said that he liked, Jordan was just like, oh, can't stand it. I hate it.
Exactly.
I'm going to go kill it.
It's like Jerry Krause likes title MJ. I don't know. If
yeah,
I
he want. Liked Tony Kukoc, and then him and Scottie Pippen went and killed Tony Kukoc.
No joke.
Poor guy. He didn't do anything.
He probably had no idea what was going on.
He literally did nothing wrong.
He's like, he's just playing against them.
He was just a talented dude overseas that Jerry Krause liked. Was a talented guy. Like, Jerry Krause had, I feel like he had plenty of reason to like Tony Kukoc. I think what rubbed Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen the wrong way is I think it was said, like, you know, when they started telling the Kukoc story, Tony Krause said that, or Jerry Krause said that Tony Kukoc, he thought was going to be like the future of the franchise, which that made no sense to me whatsoever.
Jerry Krause is a key example of you don't know what you have until it's gone.
I mean, maybe he meant like after Jordan was gone, but that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Why are you taking a team that won three titles, Jordan retires and goes to play baseball, comes back and wins two more titles, and then looking like they could win a third, why are you straight up telling that team that their coach is going to be gone after the season? Unless you're just
yeah, he said he could have gone, Phil Jackson could have gone 82-0 and he wasn't coming back.
Yeah, exactly. That's a key example of he's thinking, I guess just thinking too much in all honesty, and it got him in trouble. All right. Let's move on now. Talk about some Razorback basketball. That was your last dance recap brought to you by Seth Campbell and Scotty Bordelon, bored on Sunday nights and needing something to do.
Absolutely.
Let's start with Mason Jones. This seemed like it was going to happen, Scotty, but now we have the official word. Mason is going to stay in the NBA draft, see if he can't get selected and play somewhere in the professional league in America.
Right. And I don't think this was a big shock to really anybody that's been paying attention. And I remember, I think Mason declared for the draft on March 27th. And then I think on like April 9th, he went on the radio with Ty Richardson and
Tommy Kraft.
That's right. And Mason said then, you know, that there was probably a pretty good chance that he was going to stay in the draft. And I remember I wrote a short story just about that because it was a little bit of an update on what Mason was going to do. And I got quote tweeted by a guy, and he said, I could have told you he was going to keep his name. He was going to declare for the draft and stay in the draft, you know, after that first 40 ball against Tulsa.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess it had been a long time coming, but Mason announced that he was, or I guess CAA out in California, I guess they announced last Friday that they had signed Mason, and wasn't really a big surprise to me. Yeah. And it wasn't a surprise to me either that this announcement comes while I'm driving and I don't have my laptop like readily available. Like it's sitting in my passenger seat, but I don't have it out. Right. So I'm like, of course this happens.
I want you to type and drive while you're going down the highway.
Not going to happen. But I was probably, I don't advise anyone to do this, but I was on my phone a lot, like logging into my email on my phone. And I remembered it was, you know, after the LSU game, Mason's first year here, he hits the game winner down in Baton Rouge. And then a couple of days later, we get to talk to Mike Anderson. And, you know, I did a bunch of research and I came up with Mason's numbers in the final 5 minutes of regulation and in overtime. And those numbers were just kind of crazy to me. Like he was shooting 50% from the floor, like 40% from three, like numbers were crazy. And so I wrote a story about that, got some insight from Mason, from Mike Anderson too. And I wrote a big story, and Mason Jones' mom emailed me. She was wanting the story. So I had her email address. Mm-hmm. Somehow I remembered that I got it or that I had the email address. So I searched for her name, found her email address, and I emailed them. I was like, hey, would you be willing to share who Mason's agent is? Who did you guys sign with? And really quickly, like maybe a couple minutes later, Mason has signed with Richie Felder at CAA Sports. And, you know, CAA wasn't one of the NCAA approved, you know, sports agencies. Mm-hmm. So he gone.
He gone indeed. And I think we reasoned this was coming, even though his name is not necessarily mentioned above at one of the top of any really of the draft boards, but
there are some.
There are, but we reasoned it from multiple podcasts ago of this is the best season that he has had.
Hands without down. A doubt.
And this is probably the best season that he is going to have. If you just look at the numbers, look at the people that Arkansas is bringing back, I don't think that there was any more for Mason Jones to prove at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
Therefore, if there's nothing left for you to prove, go on. Go on and try and make something in the NBA. If it doesn't work out, go play somewhere else. Go get paid to play, because I think he is at the full height of his potential that he's going to reach at the University of Arkansas.
I think he's, and I don't want to say that he's not going to have, like, if he does end up playing in the NBA, like, I think he can have a career. But I think right now he's walking into, like, the prime of his basketball life. Like, you have a season like you just had, like, that's a great first step to get you noticed. And then if you can continue to keep playing, I don't know, maybe at that level, but if you can, I mean, if you can, you can do all the things that Mason does, somebody, and you do it at a high, at the level that Mason did it last year, somebody's going to take notice of it, and they're going to take a chance on you. May not be in the draft, but, you know, I mean, we don't know what the landscape of basketball in at any levels it's going to look like soon, but, you know, somebody you would think is going to take a chance on the SEC scoring leader just absolutely blew up last year.
Yeah, give him a chance at least. It hurt him a little bit. Actually, I think it hurt him more than just a little bit that they weren't able to have the pre-combine
Absolutely.
And combine
yeah.
stuff so that people could see his talent up close and personal. Now, just like in the NFL, they're going to have to do their scouting off of game tape and interviews over video conferencing.
Zoom interviews and stuff. Yeah, Musk said in a Zoom call on, what is today, Wednesday? Yeah, so it was Tuesday. He said that, you know, Jimmy...
Today's
Thursday. Oh, wow. He said, yes, I'm losing track of my days. But he said, Musk said on Wednesday that Jimmy Witt, Isaiah Joe, Mason Jones, have, you know, all had Zoom interviews with NBA folks and NBA teams and that kind of thing, either this week or late last week. So, I mean, all those guys, I think, are... They're in the information gathering mode still, and they're, you know, still in that phase where they're talking to teams. And, you know, I think we haven't heard just a whole lot out of Jimmy Witt, but I think Jimmy's got, you know, he's got a pretty good chance too, because his game is really tough to defend, like that mid-range game. I think he's part of the reason he's really successful at it, outside of, you know, that mid-range shot, something that his dad taught him when he was really little. But guys these days, they don't know how to defend it.
Right.
They don't know how to defend it either. Like, they're used to running out to the three-point line and contesting, or, you know, trying to block a shot around the rim. And then, you know, you kind of get in that mid-range area. It's kind of like a little no-man's land. You kind of feel like you're just on an island with Jimmy, and it's Jimmy's island. And so I feel like you're almost kind of at a disadvantage there. But, and he can also lock up on defense too. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Jimmy. Been kind of quiet on his front. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think something's probably going to happen with him, if I had to guess.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well, is that something's going to happen. I don't know where he's going to go, but something is going to happen. And Musk did say that he's getting a few phone calls about him. But that was a name I was going to bring up. It was Jimmy Witt. So I'm glad that you talked about him, Scotty. But yeah, I think that we've hit that point that Mason needed to stay. Jimmy, hopefully he can get a shot somewhere, and it's just going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out with the season just being interrupted the way that it has been. All right, moving on. Arkansas this week announced a series with border neighbor Oklahoma in Tulsa, which I think is going to be a good location for both. It's about midway. I think it may be just a few miles closer to Oklahoma City than it is to Fayetteville. But it's an easy, easy drive, 2 hours away from Fayetteville. And depending on where you're living in Northwest Arkansas, it could be closer. You get to go to Tulsa, and it's going to be a 50-50 split at a good center, at the Box Center.
Yeah, the BOK is sweet.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that really should happen. I think both borders should be played. I think Oklahoma game. And when Musselman teased this a little bit, because he did tease it in his Instagram Live a few weeks ago, talking about that they had a series coming on a neutral floor, I was kind of had my fingers crossed, Scotty, that it would be Memphis.
Oh, I did too. And Eric actually went on radio in Memphis on Wednesday, you know, a little bit after we got off the Zoom call with him. And I was waiting on Gary Parrish to ask him when the Memphis thing was going to happen, but it never got asked. But I mean, I'm not going to get too greedy right now, but right. that would be an epic series, I think.
So I'll come back to the Memphis thing in just one second, but thinking about Oklahoma, it's scheduled for 2 years. They have the option for two more. I think that this is something that, why wouldn't you play this every single year? I know that you have the SEC Big 12 challenge, but there's nine other schools in the Big 12 that you can play. I'm sure that it'll be okay, that they'll make an adjustment that you can play one Big 12 school every single year. And it's close. It's, I think, 125 miles or something like that. And Oklahoma and Arkansas are both going to be big time programs. They're in the Power Five. It's never really going to hurt you to play the other school, I don't believe. And I think with Lon Kruger there, especially, Oklahoma's had some really talented teams. So you're going to get better. And I think this is just a win-win all the way around.
Yeah, I do too. And it's going to be sweet. Like, I'm looking forward to going to Tulsa already. Like, I was just there in February for a concert with Parker McCollum opened up, which,
of course,
not going to find a bigger fan of him than me. And Randy Rogers Band came on after that, which was awesome. And then Miranda Lambert closed the thing out. It's really fun. That area down around BOK is really fun. Found a really old, it's almost like a barcade down there, which is pretty sweet. I mean, there's all kinds of different restaurants and different things you can get into down there. That'll be a pretty big attraction for the fans for sure. Because, I mean, they're not just going to come for the game.
Right.
Like, you're going to get there. You're probably going to skip out on work on Friday, and you're going to get to downtown Tulsa or wherever BOK is, and you're going to go out there and go make a whole weekend out of it. You're going to see some good basketball there too. And just thinking about the excitement around the roster that Arkansas's got, like, as of right now, I mean, it's through the roof. Like, I mean, you're seeing guys that Arkansas has signed, like KK Robinson, are shooting up. They're shooting up the rankings in the 2020 class. And then on the other side, Oklahoma's got Austin Reeves. Do you remember him?
No.
Played at Cedar Ridge High School in Arkansas. He got out of the state and ended up playing at Wichita State and then transferred to Oklahoma. He's going to be a big-time player. For sure, that kid can really score.
It's going to be interesting. I think I like the spot of Tulsa as well. It's difficult for me, Scotty, because I do like home and homes. I like going to especially a place like Oklahoma that it's just 3 hours away from Northwest Arkansas to get to Oklahoma City. So I do like seeing other places' campuses. But at the same time, the neutral site is nice because, like I said, it's only 2 hours away from Northwest Arkansas. And like you said, you can go and you can make a weekend out of it. But unlike Dallas in the A&M game, you don't have to make a weekend out of it if you really don't want to. If you just want to watch the game and it's even if it's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you can wake up at about 9 a.m. here in Northwest Arkansas, jet on over to Tulsa, get there about 11, spend some time before the game, watch the game. It gets done at 3:34, and you can head back to your house.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay there. I think the versatility of that is really, really nice. And the fact that both of these fan bases have a decent alumni base in the city is
for sure
helpful as well. I like the versatility of the Tulsa game. I think it's a win-win for both teams. And Arkansas will be traveling to Tulsa twice next year.
That's right. Yep. Arkansas, I think. So I was trying to think back. Let me pull this up. I've got a file that's got Arkansas's 2020-21 schedule as we know it, like right now. So Arkansas is reported to be playing San Francisco in the first game in that Las Vegas event.
Right.
And so we don't know who their second game is going to be, but we do know that there is a second game. So Arkansas will play Oklahoma in Tulsa. Then the following Saturday, Arkansas will play Old Dominion in North Little Rock. And then we believe that Arkansas is going to be playing in that Big 12 SEC Challenge again. So Arkansas, in its non-conference schedule, could have the potential, like right now, just right now, and we're still, what, 6 months out from almost the start of season. So right now it's looking like there's a potential that Arkansas could play Louisville, Oklahoma, and another Big 12 team just in its non-conference schedule.
Nice.
And that non-conference schedule, I think we know for sure that Arkansas is playing Oklahoma, Old Dominion, Tulsa, and I think that's it for right now. I could be mistaken. But this non-conference schedule is, what, 25% of the way done? And maybe close to – it's pushing – maybe getting close to half. I mean, but think about that. Like, that's three
– Nice.
Three Power Five schools on your non-conference schedule. And it's looking pretty nice.
So the question I have, Scotty, this kind of pertains to the Memphis thing as well, is the – Big 12 SEC Challenge was originally slated for 2 years. So what would happen is if you made the top 10 in the SEC in the previous 2 years, so 2 years ago, then you would make it into the Big 12 Challenge. So basically Arkansas next year, if you went by that standard, Arkansas next year would be in the Big 12 Challenge, but the year after that they wouldn't be because they finished 11th in the SEC this year. My question is, though, and I don't think we have an answer to this, is what's it going to look like? Because Bruce Pearl was complaining a whole lot that it was a 2-year thing instead of a 1-year thing. And I'm not so sure that the SEC hasn't taken it that some of that into consideration. And because I was asking a few people around, not anybody that would necessarily know, but just some guys that work for, you know, ESPN or something, and just asking them. And they're saying, well, we don't know. So
right.
I'm just curious about what that is. And honestly, I don't necessarily know if it would be a bad thing, especially for next year if Arkansas didn't make it into that Big 12 Challenge. Because if you're looking and you're the four teams that don't make it to the SEC Big 12 Challenge, they play in the American Conference Challenge, SEC Challenge. So they take four teams and play against the American Conference. American Conference has teams like Wichita State. Is Tulsa in the American?
I think so.
And then, of course, Memphis.
Nice.
So, if you're putting together that challenge and you do have Arkansas because they decided to do it 1 year instead of two in the Big 12 Challenge, I mean, that's just a given, right?
You would think so.
Right?
It's common sense for us, but... You know, maybe not the schedule makers. We'll see.
They'd probably send us to play like Wichita State or Tulane or something.
I wouldn't mind going to I wouldn't mind if Arkansas went to Tulane because Tulane is in New Orleans. I'm fond of New Orleans. I don't know that I'd really
like to. Is
Tulane
even in the American? I pulled that out of my head.
I don't know.
I'm going to Google this real quick.
But you and I, yesterday, we were on that Zoom call with Lon Kruger. And Lon Kruger was asked, you know, about what makes those regional rivalries kind of so special. And Lon Kruger was like, they just have a feel, you know, like an NCAA tournament. You know, like when you go, I've been to one NCAA tournament that was in Detroit.
Yikes.
And when I was there, like it was so cool to see fans from like all of the different schools and all the different teams that were, you know, playing at that venue. Like Syracuse, I think, was there. Michigan State was there. Butler was there. You know, Arkansas was there. Purdue was. Just really cool. And, you know, anytime, you know, during the whole game, like if Butler scored, the place went nuts. If Arkansas scored, the place went nuts. Like, it's just like a constant back and forth. It's almost like you got two home teams.
Uh-huh.
You got two home teams there. And that's really what you want. I think it's about creating an atmosphere that, you know, obviously promotes basketball. But it's just the environment is going to be nuts.
If you could get that Arkansas-Memphis game, and Memphis will play some games in FedEx Forum. I can't remember. Is that their home court? It may be their home court.
The FedEx Forum?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they play their home games.
Okay, so they split. Oh yeah, because they have that god awful court.
It's terrible. It's different.
Oh, it looks terrible. Don't you dare say different. Don't you dare call it what it is.
I know a guy who helped put it together, but it stands out.
Oh, Scotty. Okay, well then I guess I'll stop ragging on it. But that is
no. I mean, you entitled to your opinion.
If you don't know, Google it. It's creative. But yes, by the way, Tulane is in the American. I'm patting myself on the back there. But so think of some of the teams that you could play in this American Conference Showdown. You got Cincinnati, Houston, Tulsa. Arkansas is not going to play Tulsa because they already have
Arkansas plays Cincinnati, though. That'll turn into a rock fight. Cincinnati teams, like, I mean, historically, I mean, you know, as long as I've been paying attention, it's just tough team that can't shoot kind of
right
reputation they've got. But
yeah, Cincinnati, Houston, Wichita State, UConn is in there, Memphis.
Houston could be interesting because Arkansas has played Houston in the past.
Right.
And that's where Hunter Yurecek came from. So
exactly. And they were thinking about Kelvin Sampson. I think he was a strong candidate for the
head coaching job. Stories about, you know, I think Kelvin Sampson was doing a press conference before an NCAA tournament game. He's getting asked about the Arkansas job, and we're writing stories just based on that. And so, yeah, that could be good storylines around that too.
And then, of course, Penny Hardaway, Memphis, SMU, UCF, USF, Temple, East Carolina, and Tulane.
I'd be interested to know if Muss had any Penny Hardaway stories.
Mm.
That could be interesting. I'm sure if that happens, Bob will get the scoop at a press conference.
So. Oh, for sure. Bob will ask him 8 questions, and one of them will be about, well, do you think his name Penny is interesting?
What do you think of Little Penny?
Gotta love Bob. Oh,
man, he got on that Lon Kruger Zoom yesterday, and he owned it. He asked like 6 or 7 straight questions, and there were OU beat writers that were just like, you know, like falling back in their chair. They're like, is this dude going to stop or what?
Hey, we love Bob. We absolutely love Bob. We wouldn't give him up for the world. All right. Let's see. We had something else to talk about here, Scotty. Oh, yes. JD Notte. JD Notte transfer. Coming in, he's from Jacksonville, or played at Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And Corey Williams, an Arkansas assistant, has some personal relationships to him. When Corey Williams was at Stetson, they played each other, and JD Notte beat up on Corey Williams as Stetson had.
Yeah, he did. JD Notte played Stetson-led, or Corey Williams-led Stetson teams 4 times. JD won all 4 times. And he averaged a slight 18.5 points, 7.5 rebounds.
Jeez.
And then one of those games, he went for 16 points, 14 rebounds. So
messed around and got a double-double.
Yeah, he did. And yeah, JD's just – so, I mean, when I did the interview with Corey Williams asking about his first year at Arkansas, you know, toward the end of that, I just asked him what he knew about JD. And I had forgotten that, you know, those guys played in the same conference at the same time. And he just – he's super high on JD, you know, in terms of his competitiveness. And, you know, he just thinks JD's gotten a whole lot better since he got to Arkansas in that development year. You know, like the title suggests, was really beneficial for JD. I mean, I was asking when I talked to him, he just about his development year, he just kind of went on and on about having just like 24-hour, 7-day-a-week access to a practice gym. And so I was like, so what was it like at Jacksonville? He was like, we would have to share our gym with the women's team, the cheerleaders, the pom squad, and anybody else who needed it. And Jeez. So he would have to go other routes just to get shots up, get work in. And Corey Williams, Eric Musselman, and JD, they were just like, they all felt like he got a whole lot better during his development year, which was, I mean, that's what you want. And, you know, at certain times during the season, he would kind of play the opposing team's best guard on the scout team. And so, I mean, he got a lot of work in. He's one of the guys on the roster. I know there's tons of excitement about the 6 guys that Arkansas signed in this class, but maybe he's, you know, flying under the radar a little bit. Really excited about him. And, I mean, you watch some of his highlights, dude can go. And Muss was really complimentary of him. He said he thinks JD's going to be an even better 3-point shooter just because the dude spends tons of time in the gym just working on a shot, working on his game. He's working obviously on his ball handling, wanted to get stronger during this development year, and working on his jumper, getting his jumper off quicker. So It's a pretty good year for JD, I think.
Yeah, he was able to work in as the opposing team's best player during scout and also work in with some of the drills I read in your story, Scotty. He's an interesting fit because he's almost a big question mark because you just don't know what he's going to bring to the table.
Yes, we hadn't seen him. We didn't talk to him at all during the season. So
yeah, I don't think
he's just kind of an unknown.
So I thought it was really good that you got to talk to him and got to find out just a little bit more about him and at Jacksonville averaging 18 on Stetson and the Hatters against Corey Williams.
Oh yeah, which is fun. Corey Williams remembers it.
I think that he'll be a welcome addition to this team and just going to add to the depth. I mean, it's just going to be a completely different scenario for Arkansas basketball next year. Just completely different than the one that we just experienced in 2019 and 2020.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. And one of the things I talked to JD about is, you know, just he's back home in Covington, Georgia. You know, it's his hometown. And I asked him, you know, just like when I talked to him, like, so when this will, we're doing this on Thursday, so on Friday it'll probably have been about 3 weeks since I talked to JD. And so I was asking him, you know, what his time has been like, what he's been doing in his spare time, you know, since the season ended. He's like, no, not really much has changed for him except the location. Like, he's still working out. And I was asking him, you know, some specifics on some of his workouts. And 3 days a week, he trains on an outdoor court with a guy that he considers to be his greatest basketball influence, which is Marquise Gilstrap. He's a Covington, Georgia native, played at Iowa State, and then his professional career took him to Turkey, Slovakia, Europe, played in the D League and in the Summer League. So JD really likes the fact that he's working out with a guy who's kind of been there, done that before. And 3 days a week, they're working out with each other. And then on the other 2 days, I guess Tuesday, Thursday, he's working out in a gym that one of his middle school coaches has given him access to. So he's not sitting on his hands. He's by his account, he's, you know, working toward getting better. And Mus has said on a previous teleconference that this time, like this, I don't know if you call it downtime, but it's unsupervised time, you know, like away from the staff, away from facilities, obviously. Mus says, you know, guys that take advantage of this time are going to be the ones who come back when the team reconvenes, and we're going to see like the biggest jumps in their game. And I wouldn't be surprised if JD's one of those guys. He's putting in work for sure.
Yeah, this time is not a time for you to take a break from the sport, is what I've realized talking to multiple University of Arkansas athletes across different sports. Is this is not a time to take a break and let your training relax, but instead to step it up and kind of see if you can separate yourself from the pack that maybe is taking a break. So it's definitely not a time to be sitting back and laying on your haunches. Well, speaking of sitting back and laying on your haunches, we sat back last week and we did not give you the 1994 trivia link, which we apologize for. It was just not ready yet.
Yeah, we're working on it. Well, I'm excited to put it together and get it out there, but still got some, you know, final touches.
Yes. So while we're waiting on that, Scotty, do you have it readily available so we can give away one more trivia question? And I'll get you to pull that up. And as you're pulling that up, I put Scotty on the spot.
No, you're good. I got it.
I'll let you know that if you ever are curious, like we're talking about hitting the links in the description or anything, whatever you're listening to this on, there'll be a description. I know on Apple iTunes, if you just click on the cover art for the podcast and you click on that and you look down, that's where you can like, that's where you can subscribe to the podcast. That's where you can write a review, which we would greatly appreciate if you wanted to give us a 5-star review. You know, we like to think that we're 5 stars, but that's at least what my mom tells me.
Moving up in the rankings
too. Yeah, exactly. Trying to write a review as well. It's a great way for people to come and get to know the basketball podcast of Mid-America. And in that description as well, that's where the links will be that will take you back to our site, wholehogsports.com, to where you can read the stories that we link. Stories like Scotty's JT Note story. If you wanted to look back at Mason Jones saying that he's going to sign with an agent, that'll be in today's description. So that's where you can find all those.
I'm not sure who else had who Mason's agent was, you know, right after he signed, but I mean, kind of sounds like bragging, but I'm sure somebody else did. But
working hard for you is what we're trying to do.
Yeah, we're trying.
All right, Scotty, which one? Give us one more 1994 trivia question as we try and pass the time.
I can't remember if I asked this last week or not.
Well, if you did, I won't tell you. That way it looks like I'm smart.
Right. Which team did not beat Arkansas in 1993-94? Did I ask that?
I can't remember if it was on air or not. I remember you asking me this. But
so your options are Mississippi State.
Okay.
Alabama.
Okay.
Ole Miss. And okay. Kentucky.
Well, if you go through process, I know that they lost to Kentucky because they did not win the SEC tournament that year. Because the only time Arkansas has won the SEC tournament is when they weren't supposed to in 2000 under Nolan, correct? Okay, so it's not Kentucky. I remember for some reason them losing to Alabama during the middle of the season, which was not a very good team. And I think it was Mississippi State that they lost to as well. So I'm going to say Ole Miss.
That would be correct.
Boom. Process of elimination. That's what you got to look forward to on the basketball trivia.
Yeah, so if you guys just listen to the podcast, you're going to have six questions. You're at least going to get 6 out of 15 right.
Hey,
on the quiz.
Don't say we didn't help
you. When it does come out.
We don't say we didn't help you out here. And there will also be more quizzes. We went through training today on all of these quizzes and how to put out. So we're going to give you some interactive content here on WholeHogSports.com.
All you got to do is give us your email, your address, and your social security number, and then you'll be able to take it.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to get your results.
Your mother's maiden name as well helps. Your high school mascot is pretty cool, and the street that you first lived on.
Mm-hmm. Current address, old address, social security number, yeah. Email address.
Yeah.
That's work.
No big deal. Your credit card number too. This test is not free.
The three digits on the back of your debit card.
Oh, we're just kidding. All you gotta do is put in your email address and you will get the answers. All right. Before we wrap it up, Scotty, you've got some amazing things in the works over there.
That's kind.
Tease us a little bit. Want us to come back to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America to get some deep insight on.
Yeah, so I was listening. I was traveling last week, and I pulled up the Hog Pod. And I think a lot of people probably did when, you know, that I think there was a bonus episode with Eric Musselman and Colby Hale.
I don't like to send other people to other podcasts, right? Because we're a podcast and we want you to come. But we...
I'm giving you a look behind the curtain.
But we are also not dumb here. And we know that you are a Razorback fan that wants great access. I went and listened to the Hog Pod as well with the podcast with Eric Musselman and Mike Neighbors.
On Monday, yeah, that was good.
That was fantastic.
It was pretty fun.
I'm not going to lie. I listened to it. It was good. So stay here and listen to us for some great basketball insight. But... if you want to, you can go check that out as well.
So while I was traveling, I pulled up an old episode. It was probably released late last week. And it was Eric Musselman and Colby Hale, the women's soccer coach. And somehow they got to talking about their first jobs. And Muss was talking about how he was, you know, trying to sell season tickets for the Clippers. And Colby Hale told a story that I'm not going to get into too much detail on it because I can't remember the specifics. But it basically was just, you know, him. He walked into this company, didn't really know just a whole lot about it. And basically his job was kind of like just almost like customer service. They were like, you call in, he was listening. And he was just like, his job was basically to just listen to people because he was genuinely curious about their customer experience. And so by the end of it, you know, he was like one of the highest paid guys like in that company.
Just nice.
Because he had the basic principle of just, you know, just listening to people and seeing what they needed. And so they got my mind racing. What have other coaches done in the past for their first jobs? And so earlier this week, I talked to Todd Schaefer, the associate head coach for the women's basketball team. And I talked to Mike Neighbors. And I wrote a story about Todd Schaefer, just kind of going back to his roots and the people that influenced him in Cincinnati.
Which he is a huge part of that women's basketball program.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge. Yeah, Matt gave me the idea. Matt Jones, our boss, gave me the idea to talk to Todd Schaefer because he feels like Todd's just got a lot of influence in that program. And I believe he was the only person on Neighbor's staff at Washington that he brought to Arkansas, if I'm not mistaken. I think Neighbors brought him up there for a year. and they've been working together 4 years now, so that would line up. They just finished year three here.
If you just listen to neighbors talk in a post-game press conference or something, if you ask them about a play or what the strategy was, more than half of the time, I would say, he'll say, oh, well, Todd was drawing this up. Coach Shaver was drawing this up in the timeout, and he had this play. And Coach Neighbors lets Coach Shaver have a ton of reign over that program.
Oh, sure.
And a lot of influence.
I mean, I was looking for a picture in our photo collection that we've got, and searched Todd Shaver, and there's about 8 or 9 pictures that showed up, and all but one of them, which is the one that I used, I think you can see him holding really tight to like some papers that have a team logo on it, and it's all color coded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all game plan stuff, really in depth information that he's got over there on the bench. So that was a really cool conversation I had with Todd Shaver. You can read that story at Whole Hog Sports right now. You just click on my name and it's, you know, a couple links down.
We'll also put it in the description. I'll make sure to put it in the description of this podcast.
So I asked Todd Shaver, you know, what his first job was, and I asked Mike Neighbors what his first job was, because, you know, he grew up in Greenwood, and you start talking to guys who grew up in those kinds of communities, like those small communities, but and like everybody knows everybody. I kind of relate to that because I'm from a really small town too, much smaller than Greenwood, but still mm-hmm. considered a small town. Neighbors told me the story that there was a young branch manager at a local bank in the late 80s when he was at Greenwood High School. He came to Greenwood's gym and he walked into the team's head coach's office, who was H.B. Stewart, was the coach then. And, you know, the guy, the branch manager's name was Greg Stanfill. And he walked into H.B. Stewart's office and he said, you know, I'm looking for, you know, some trustworthy kids that, you know, maybe have some flexible hours that, you know, could make me or could help me clean up my bank, you know, a couple times a week. And, you know, maybe once real thoroughly on the weekend. And H.B. Stewart was like, man, I got a team full of those guys. And he was like, he told Greg Stanfill, he was like, so how about we give the job to the first kid out on the floor? Enter Mike Neighbors.
Nah.
Mike Neighbors, at the time, the period before he went over to the gym for practice, he was a coach's aide. So I guess he got out a little bit early and he was over in the gym, you know, shooting on one of the goals. And before you know it, he's got a job cleaning a bank in Greenwood, Arkansas for $50 a week.
There you go.
Pretty neat.
What was your first job?
You're going to laugh at this. This is going to tell you how small my town was. I worked at a convenience. So Sparkman's got, at the time, it had 2 convenience stores.
Nice.
One of them was named, and I'm not joking, The Food Place. And then on the other end of Main Street was Sparky's, which was kind of another convenience store.
Sparky's and Sparkman?
It was a gas station.
Whoa.
But The Food Place was like your typical convenience store, but this couple owned it, Garland and Jeanette Wright. Garland liked to smoke meat, and so he did barbecue, and he also had, you know, a sandwich counter in the back. Like he would make the best barbecue nachos in the world, and then his cold cut sandwiches. Like nice. you could buy the ingredients from him and take them home, and it didn't taste the same as if he made it.
Nice.
So I worked at that store for a summer. I worked 2 days a week, Thursday and Friday, you know, when the stock trucks came, when it was time to stock the shelves and stuff. So I did that. And basically all day Thursday, I would just be stocking shelves, and like you'd have like the inventory list. And so you pulled something out of a box, or you could look at the information on the box and you'd check it off the list. And so I did that. And then basically on Fridays, I was just kind of, you know, helping behind the meat counter when the lunch rush hit, because there's nothing like a lunch rush in a small town that's got 3 sawmills. Guys want to come over and get cold cut sandwiches and barbecue sandwiches and stuff on their lunch break. And so, I mean, it was hectic. And so on Fridays I would, you know, kind of sweep and clean up and finish up whatever inventory stuff we had left. And, you know, after the lunch rush on Friday, which was crazy, and then everybody would try to come cash their check there on Friday when they got let off work. And
At the convenience store?
Yeah, at this convenience store.
Cash your check.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, instead of going to the bank.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, that's how it was. Probably still is. You know, if food place was still open, they do that at Sparky's. But they would send me out into the parking lot with a pair of gloves and a trash bag, and they would tell me to pick up trash and cigarette butts out of the parking lot. That was my first job.
Nice.
How about you?
Summer going into 10th grade year. No, maybe I had a car. So whenever I got a car, I can't remember, then I could get a job. And so I had two jobs basically at the same time, both equally comical. One, my church had a Starbucks cafe in it. And so it was a bigger church in Little Rock. The funny thing is I apply for the job there because it's just once a week. And I'm like, I'm not trying to work just a ton, but I need some money for gas in the tank for the summer so I can get around and hang out with my buddies and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was like, one day a week won't be bad. So I apply for the job and I get it. The problem is, Scotty, I don't like coffee. Never have. And here I am working at a Starbucks trying to figure out how to make coffee, which was interesting itself. And waking up at 5 a.m. to get into work because you have to be there and get everything ready before everybody hits early church. So that was interesting in itself. My other story, during the same time, one of my friends in my grade at my high school was named Robert Paul Upshaw. His dad was Robert Upshaw. He was at the time, I don't think he still is higher up in FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. They are related some way to Gene Upshaw from NFL fame, but he was not the best. I don't know. Like, this is not a slight at Mr. Upshaw, and he knows this. not the best at time management, not the best at planning. So he approaches me, I think this is probably like the last week of school, and is like, hey, I got a job opportunity for you. I said, okay. He goes, we teach basketball camps to inner city schools or in inner city kids during the summer when they go to camps or whatever. Would you be interested? Yeah, sure. I'd be interested. It's like, all right, I'll get you some more information later. 1 week goes by, 2 weeks goes by. I think I even reached out to him and called him one time or texted him.
Just to make sure he wasn't pulling your leg.
Yeah, and he never reached back. I'm like, whatever. I still have this other job. It won't be a big deal. Well, on one Monday, he calls me and goes, Seth, what are you doing? I'm like, I mean, I think I had just gone to practice that morning or something for one sport. And I'm like, not a whole lot. He goes, hey, we're going to work. You want to come? Sure. And so he goes, meet me here at this place at 2:00. Well, 2:30, he shows up. Like I said, not the best at time. And I get in his car. I'm like, where are we going? He takes me to Juvie, the Arkansas Juvenile Detention Center. I'm like, what is going on? And he goes, yeah, this is where our first camp is. So we walk in and there you have to walk through a metal detector. They're like, hey, make sure you don't take your phone in, your keys in or whatever. I'm going, what is going on? And we're walking through Juvie. We go to their basketball court. I'll tell you, some of the best minded kids that we had the entire summer. Because they were supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
I did that for 3 years, for three summers with him, and it was fantastic. It was a great time. But one time, funny story, and then I'll wrap it up. He leaves. So this is probably my third year. I've got a bunch of guys that are younger than me now, because there were a few guys that were older than me when I first started. Now there's a few guys that work with me that are younger than me. And so we're teaching these basketball camps. He's like, hey, I got to go do something else. I'm gone. You got this under control. Okay. So we're at Juvie, and this is my third year. So I'm like, these kids are normally pretty well behaved. Well, it's me and two or three other guys, and we're just going to go through. Well, we always tried to do scrimmages at the end. Well, these guys started getting into it, and they started getting feisty. You can kind of tell. It's just like in a normal basketball game. You can kind of tell when tensions are getting a little edgy. And I'm like, all right, hey, let's just calm it down, whatever, because we're the referees for this thing. Their supervisors that they have for the jail had stepped out for some reason. And I don't know. And I think that they knew that, because these guys step up and they started to get into a shoving match after something happened down underneath. And I'm going, I'm not getting in the middle of this. I'm sorry. This is above my pay grade. And then all of a sudden, They get in the shoving match. Voices start to raise. Those guys flew in there. Whistles started blowing. Everybody started like looking around. They start throwing people up against the wall. And I'm like, I didn't do anything. I swear, I'm up against the wall too. Like, don't hurt me. And they got that under control. And let's just say basketball camp ended that day. No more.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's insane.
It was intense.
You never told me that story before. So I was like on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Yes. So that was my first job. Teaching basketball camps. We went all over the place. It was a lot of fun.
Do you have any other jobs?
Besides those two? Ooh. I got in with this guy that was cutting grass. Like, that was his job, was to go around and cut grass.
Everybody's got one of those stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 days.
Lasted 3 days?
I lasted 3 days. We worked one day for 4 hours because I didn't get in. He called me. I was like, hey, I'll just use you from 5 until dark. So yeah, I basically worked 4 hours. I wake up the next morning at 7 and we cut grass from like 7:30 a.m. until 6 or 7 at night. Crazy. Wake up the next day and he's like, we're going to do this all over again. Wake up the next day and I go, I'm out.
Wow.
I was like, I'm finding another job. I'm doing something else. I'm going to college because this is my seat going into my freshman year of college. I was like, I'm out. This is not for me. I'm not trying to work 12 hours. Like, hats off to those guys. Cutting grass isn't terrible. It's just kind of mindless work.
Yeah.
But I lasted 3 days. I have mad props to those guys. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what my father-in-law does for some extra money now. He's retired. But my second job, like I did that. I worked at the food place, I think, the summer before my sophomore year of high school. And they paid me like straight cash.
Nice.
And it was like right when the minimum wage went up at that time. So, I mean, it wasn't like a ton of money, but it was like, you know, like $125 for like 2 days work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 15, 16 years old. Like I'll take that in a heartbeat.
That's a decent amount of money.
The next summer, I was like, I told myself, I said, I'm not going back to that convenience store. I don't want to go back. Like, I'll go back to that convenience store on my lunch break. So I went, for some reason, I went and worked at a sawmill, and I was stacking lumber from 6 a.m. to 3:30 in the afternoon, nice. five days a week. It was terrible. It was terrible. I don't recommend working at a sawmill ever.
So you just stacked lumber all day?
Yeah. So basically how it works is the grounds of the sawmill are pretty big. So like toward the back of the land, you've got, obviously that's where you stack your logs and you like divide it up into like different types of wood. And so some type of equipment like picks the log up and then takes it over and funnels it into this shed area. And then it gets like sliced up into like however many different boards. And then where I was on the outside, but I was kind of under an awning. There's a guy at the front of the chain. He's a lumber grader. So he'll mark like a 0, a 1, a 2, or he'll mark like an X or something on it. And I was in charge of the twos. So anytime he wrote a 2, he drew a 2 on that board with his board chalk, mm-hmm. I would grab it, stack it. And I mean, it would get hectic. Like, talk about a place. I mean, you're working out there in the middle of the summer, uh-huh. doing that stuff for what, 9.5 hours, 10 hours. That's not fun.
No,
it's not fun. You got 30 minutes for lunch, so you better be back on time.
So you went to the food place and got yourself some cold cuts.
I did. Absolutely.
Said, I'm not working here anymore. I don't know if my
Except
job
I did
is...
it like the next summer too. It's ridiculous. Don't recommend it.
Yeah, no. That's it. Yeah, I have mad respect to the people that can do that.
But anytime I'm like, I mean, there are obviously times like on this job where I'm just like, oh man, I just don't feel like doing something today. I'm like, if you don't do this, you're gonna be like, what else are you qualified to do?
Work at a sawmill.
Yes. Not qualified to do anything. I went to school for what I'm doing now.
Right.
I literally have no other job skills. Except pulling lumber off the green chain and stacking it.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's good. That's really good. All right,
so fear always creeps in whenever, you know, you don't feel like doing anything. I mean, you could always be working back at that sawmill. Like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that.
I'm good. That's fantastic. That's a great story. We got a little sidetracked there.
A lot of characters out there too, man.
Oh,
you grow up fast. I'll say that. You grow up fast out there.
Did you learn any new curse words?
Oh, yeah. All of them.
So my dad worked on a construction plant when he was in college. I think all 4 years is college during the summer. And he said, I don't know if construction workers are related to sailors, but by their language, I think that they are.
For sure. So, for sure.
Same way with sawmill.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing before we get out, you wanted to tease a little something on Connor Vanover.
Yes. So I've got multiple things in the work. A, upon further review, is inching closer towards completion. We've gotten multiple delays, but I've teased it multiple times. I'm going to tease it again. Keep your lookout for that. I'm oh so close, Scotty. I can just taste it. And it's a project.
I'm excited about it. I showed my dad last weekend. You sent that updated clip. I sent it to him. He's thought it looked really good.
It's a labor of love, man, because it's intensive. And then I also have gotten to talk to Connor Vanover and his high school coaches that he's had, just for some insight onto him. I feel like we were going around and talking about some of the guys that were on the team. And Connor's a decently good friend of mine. His brother is more of a friend because he was about the same. He's the same age as I am, just a year younger. But Connor Vanover, he's been through a lot. He was 7 foot tall when he hit eighth grade.
Crazy.
So he's got. He's
I was 4 foot seven.
Yeah, exactly. Just imagine being 7 foot tall in the eighth grade. But anyway, he's got a ton of things to talk about. He's led a pretty interesting life. He's come from Little Rock, went out to Vegas, then up to California and come back. And there's some interesting things. I don't know if this is going to make the story or not. And we'll talk about it more in detail the next time we have the basketball podcast in Mid-America. But Jimmy Witt, for just a little tease, Jimmy Witt and Connor Vanover played each other in high school. And it went really well for one of them. We'll leave it at that.
There's your little cliffhanger.
There it is. All right, Scotty. Anything else to add?
I think that's about it, dog.
I think so. We greatly appreciate you listening to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Like I said, if you could hit the subscribe button, that way this podcast will just end up exactly wherever you're listening to it. Just end up right in your library. You won't have to go search for us anywhere else. You can also like and subscribe or like and rate our podcast as well, wherever you are listening to it. We're available anywhere. So if you had to search for us to find it on wherever you're listening right now.
Yeah, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, SoundCloud.
You can go to any of those places and find us. So
the website.
We are there.
Yeah.
Make sure to visit the description to find those stories that Scotty was talking about. Mason Jones, JD Note, Todd Schaefer. All of those will be in a link in the description. And we will see you back here next time on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America.